Hello, welcome back to Coach Enya Below the Bar podcast. So this week I wanted to do just a Q&A. So it gave people a chance to ask me anything related to food and the gym. And I said I'll put a podcast together. So I put the question box up quite early in the day on Wednesday. And obviously, you know, people are in work, they're doing things during the day, that a lot of the questions didn't come in until actually Wednesday evening. Like, I think I only had about like 4 or 5 by the time that I usually sit down to do the podcast. So what I did was I said that I'll just record it towards the morning after I've gotten like, you know, a bulk of questions, which I did. I got like 20 good ones that were unique because there was a lot of kind of repetitive ones in there. So like I'll hit two boards with the one stone answering some of these questions anyway. So a lot of the same questions were coming up. So yeah, we'll jump straight into it. But actually beforehand, I had a call with my own coach yesterday. Wednesday is my check-in day with my coach. So that's usually how online coaching works. So you'll hire the coach and you fill in your consult form or whatever. Then you have a call or whatever, or even through email. And your coach, well, this is how I do it anyway. This is what I've learned from my own online coach. You're given a day. So like, say Wednesday is my check-in day. So every Wednesday between, you know, 9 a.m. and 12, you'll hear from your coach. They'll look at your check-in form that you fill out. It's like a Google sheet. You fill in like the calories that you had every day that you'll take from MyFitnessPal because you've been using MyFitnessPal to log your food. You'll put in what day is. It's literally like a timetable. It looks like a timetable. So you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you'll have like, you know, different columns like, did you train today? How well did you adhere to your nutrition, etc.? And then your coach will look at that at the end of every week. And then, yeah, they'll send you feedback. And then if there's something that, you know, kind of shows red flags, like that might be something that you'll discuss with your coach and how to fix it, how to improve it. But yeah, so I had a call with my coach because he was asking, what did I want to do in January? Like, what was my goal for 2024? And I told him that I want to do another photo shoot. So yeah, I just have the hunger to do another photo shoot. So a lot of people, like, you have to have a really good why to do something like this, because it's a completely different animal to like just lifestyle coaching, to like, you know, just wanting to lose weight for, I don't know, like a wedding or a holiday, or just like to shape up. Like the route that you take for a photo shoot, it's a bit more, way more restricted. But you know that when you're signing up for it, like it's not as like, I'll still be, you know, choosing the flexible approach. And by flexible I mean like, I'll still be like, I won't be on a meal plan. Like I could opt for a meal plan if I wanted to, but I like cooking my own food and I like the food that I eat. Like I don't want someone telling me what I should be eating, because then it's going to be harder for me to stick to. So I've gotten great results by just choosing the food that I want to eat. And you know, obviously it's helped me with my macros. It's, I mean, protein as well, like, you know, proper carbohydrates and fats, etc. But what was I saying there? I've just lost my train of thought. So yeah, I'm going to be taking the flexible approach. However, like if I'm just doing a normal like fat loss phase, I will still have like a meal out on the weekend, like, you know, a mindful approach. I wouldn't be having like a fucking chipper Friday and Saturday. And you know, limit alcohol as much as possible. But when you are doing a photo shoot, like, why would you? I think that like they cost like £500 to do. So the actual photo shoot itself, like at the end of it, is about £500. And I'm like, why would I put myself through this like rigorous process, still drink alcohol, still have meals out in restaurants, when I know I'm not going to get the finished product that I'm looking for? Because it's quite a long, tedious process. It is, because you're not doing this in like 4 or 5 weeks, like getting shredded. Like it's that's not normal. Unless you already have a low body fat percentage. I suppose the more fat that you have to take off, the longer it's going to take. And it has to be a sustainable approach as well. Like, and you know, it can't be like, again, a rigorous process where, excuse me, where, you know, you're using an unsustainable approach, because you're not going to last. And what can happen is a bad rebound. So that's like, you need to have a reverse diet after your diet. So slowly coming out of the diet phase. But if you're going hell for leather for like 4 or 5 weeks and, you know, you're using an unsustainable approach, what happens is you end up just putting it all back on. So it's going to be quite a long process. It's going to be from like January to probably like the end of April. So like 16 to 19 weeks, I think. We'll gather that by the time it gets to April. Like we'll know by looking at myself. My coach will decide then whether we need to like push for another couple of weeks or not. But yeah, I just love a challenge. I absolutely love a challenge. I'm addicted to a challenge. I'm addicted to goals. I feel like if I don't have a goal and I'm going into the gym and I'm aimless, like it's harder for me to stick to it. Like I need, not that I have to be dieting all the time, but like at the moment I'm in a stage now where, you know, I'm getting stronger in the gym, I'm building muscle, I'm having a break from dieting and stuff, and it's great. It's great for your mind. You can't constantly be dieting. Like you can't, it's not good for you. It really isn't. And you can get diet fatigue, and then that's how people rebound, and they're just, they just can't stick to it. They're sick of like being in a calorie deficit. Like I have people contacting me, hey, I'm in a calorie deficit the last 6 months and I'm not losing weight. And I'm like, who goes into a calorie deficit for half the year? Like it's unsustainable. Like I think 12 to 16 weeks is more than enough. And not even for results, but like mentally, like that's mentally tiring. Like just constantly, you know, I suppose not having to make, like with a photo shoot, you have to make way more sacrifices than you do with just a normal fat loss phase. Like I know I'm currently off alcohol for 90 days until the 9th of February. I'm probably going to be off it now until April, May. Like it's not even going to be 90 days anymore. I gave up alcohol the last time I did a photo shoot, and now I'm going to be giving it up again, but just for longer this time. My last photo shoot was 9 weeks, and this one's probably going to be about 16 to 17 weeks. We'll have to gauge that towards the end, but again, it's way more restricted than a lifestyle a normal fat loss phase. Yeah, but that's what you're signing up for. You have to make a lot of sacrifices, and I already said I want to go into next summer not being in a deficit, because I found it very tough this year. Like, you know, even the seasoned pros, like people who are just starting off in a deficit, are going to find it tough in general. But you know, doing it during the summer, I find that a lot tougher than doing it over Christmas, being in a calorie deficit, because I've done a couple of Christmases now where, you know, I'm tracking my food, I'm going to the gym, etc. And Christmas is just one day. And, you know, because I'm not drinking either, I'm going to be consuming way less calories when it comes to alcohol. I'm saving a lot of calories by not drinking. But Christmas is just one day. And I find during the summer, there's so much more on. Like there's concerts, there's festivals, there's holidays. I found that tough being in a calorie deficit. I think I could definitely do a calorie deficit over Christmas. Just a normal fat loss phase, you know, obviously limit alcohol, limit meals out. Like, you know, pick maybe 1 week where you're going to be going to your Christmas party and having like one or two nights out over the month. But yeah, I found the summer way tougher. So I'm happy now that I'm going to be doing a deficit from like January to April, and I can enjoy my summer. So yeah, that's my goal now for 2024 is a photo shoot. And I'm going to document it on my Instagram page as well. So, you know, if anyone's ever thinking about doing it, I would never push a photo shoot on anyone. Again, it's a different animal altogether. And to be able to do something that 99% of the population wouldn't be able to do, is that feels like a massive achievement for me, you know, because I used to be a lazy bitch. I was a lazy bitch. I never used to move. And the reason I never used to move is because I wasn't moving. I wasn't used to moving. I wasn't used to being active. So it's just, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. If you are a couch potato and, you know, you find it hard to get motivated, it's because you're not moving. That's why it's hard. Like, you know, a body in motion stays in motion. But anyway, yeah, that's my goal for 2024 photo shoot. Can't wait to get started. And again, we're not going to be like starting off the bat with like, you know, 90 minutes of cardio a day. Like that's crazy. What you do is you ease yourself into it, and then towards the end, that's when it starts to get tough. Like I suppose 50% of it I know I'm going to be well able for, because I've done a good few deficits. But again, it's the sacrifice and the restriction that comes with a photo shoot as opposed to a normal fat loss phase. So yeah, I'll be giving up alcohol for probably the foreseeable now, probably till May. Anyway, so the questions. Question one, can you reduce tummy fat without a tummy tuck? Yes, the thing is with people, so they get into this, you know, like they just want to lose body fat, but I want to lose tummy fat. I want to get rid of this, and that they're holding their belly and stuff. Tummy fat, it's usually one of the last places that it disappears from, unfortunately. It is. It's really slow. Like I've always had a bit of fluff on my stomach, you know, and obviously through multiple fat loss phases, like taking breaks in between and stuff, it has gone down. And I always try to use this analogy, like imagine two big piles of snow, because people put on body fat in different areas of their body. Okay, like if you can choose where you store it, you could choose where you want it to lose it, but we can't choose where we store it, and that's down to like genetics. Women usually store body fat in their legs and their stomach. And you might notice that men just store a lot of body fat around their midsection. You never see really a man going around with big legs unless they're like morbidly obese. Like some morbidly obese people that you would see in America. Sorry, sound like Marge Simpson. That you would see in like America, and they're going around on the scooters and stuff. But yeah, women tend to store it in their bum, their legs, and yeah, their midsection. So what I would say is it's just a long, tedious process and you just have to keep at it. It depends how much you have to lose there. It really does. But the two piles of snow analogy is wherever you have more body fat, you know, let's say you have a massive pile of snow and a small pile of snow and the sun comes out, what's going to melt quicker? The small pile of snow, because there's less of it there. So if you have like body fat in your arms and there's not much of it there, but there's more body fat in your stomach, where are you going to notice it going first? Your arms, because there's less of it to lose. That's why you always notice people losing body fat in their face first, because they store less body fat in their face. And it's usually the first place where you notice it on someone. Oh, you've lost weight in your face, you can see it. But their midsection, it's probably going to take months, if not longer. And that can turn people off. They're like, oh, this is such a high mountain to scale, I'm just not going to bother. But time's going to pass anyway. It's going to pass anyway. So you're going to spend it doing something about it, or you're going to spend it doing the same. Just not doing anything about it. So yeah, it's, you can take a shortcut and get a tummy tuck. But what's going to happen is, you know, if you put on body fat, you can put on body fat in your stomach again. Whereas if you actually learn how to do it properly, you can keep it off you with good, sustainable, lifelong habits. That's where you build character. That's where, you know, you get educated. It's in the process. And by getting a tummy tuck, you're just ignoring the process and you're cutting that out. You're cutting that part out. And the next time you put on body fat, you're just going to be back at square one again. You're going to be like, oh, I have, you know, I suppose belly fat again. What am I going to do? Get another tummy tuck? Like, I've had friends who've had, like, they've gone to Turkey and they've got the gastric band, or, you know, they've had half their stomach removed. And to be honest, like, it's such a dangerous process. Like, I do understand to an extent, like, some people are very, very stuck and they feel stuck and they think that's their only option. And I just wish that there was a pill out there that they could swallow to make them realise you're not stuck. You know, you can get out of this and you will eventually get that mindset and build the patience to do this properly. But there's so many issues arising from people going over to Turkey and getting like these stomach operations. Like, some of them are fatal. Like, some of them are actually fatal and they're just very, very dangerous. Like, you're signing your life away the minute you lie on that table. You really are. Rather than just, you know, hiring a coach, getting educated, improving your lifestyle, improving your habits, replacing the bad ones with good ones that are going to positively impact your life in the long run. That's what I would say, you know, versus a tummy tuck and then losing body fat correctly in a sustainable way. But if I understand, you know, people want to lose belly fat for the confidence side of things. I do totally understand that, but you just have to keep at it. You have to keep at it. There's no shortcuts. And again, it's probably one of the last places to go, but just keep at it. And it's going to take longer than you think. But, you know, if you just see this is the lifestyle now. I don't have any end date. I don't want to lose this belly by the 5th of May or whatever. Like, this is just, I'm just going to keep at this now. I'm going to take diet breaks every so often and then I'm going to go back to it and then I'm going to keep chipping away at it. Every time you do a fat loss phase, you're going to chip away at belly fat. And then when you go back up to maintenance, you're going to maintain your weight. And then when you go back into a deficit, you're going to start chipping away at it again. But you can't be doing like these 6 month long diets. Like, it's just not beneficial. I'll jump into that down the line of the podcast. But yes, I would recommend losing body fat the correct way rather than getting an operation. That's just a personal trainer's point of view, unfortunately. Number two, time of the month, motivation dips. I do have a podcast on this, menstrual cycle and fat loss. But if I was just list off a couple of tips, I would say the week before your period is usually when women are like, you know, really cranky, they're really irritable. The cramping starts, etc. And then the week of that period, you can feel very sluggish and bloated and it's just not a nice feeling. For the week, for the week during your period, you could go back up to maintenance calories. If you're currently in a calorie deficit, and it's obviously with women only, I would go back up to maintenance the week of my period. So that way that I can have like the extra chocolate bar or whatever that you crave. It could be crisps, I don't know. Or, you know, have an extra meal off plan on the weekend. If you usually only have one, you could have maybe two, especially if you're gone up to maintenance calories. But that's probably a much more sustainable approach than constantly over restricting or thinking, oh, you know, if I go over my calories, I fucked it all up and this is happening every month. Like, learn how to start, you know, what works for you. How are you going to be able to maintain it? Don't be looking at other people and thinking, oh, well, they're doing that, so I'll do that. Like, that's not going to work for you because that's their lifestyle. In terms of motivation, motivation is fleeting and we can't depend on it. I always say this, motivation is like a shift friend. It's only there when it's convenient for you and it's never there when you actually need it. 9 times out of 10, the people that you look up to online who have, like, you know, a body that you admire or inspires you, they got that by not being motivated, by just being disciplined and being consistent and doing the work when they really, really didn't want to do it. In 9 times out of 10, it was a motivation that got them up off the couch. So unfortunately, you have to stop waiting around for motivation. I do understand, though, when it's your time of the month, yes, there are going to be some days where you just feel like shit. On day one of my period, like, I don't want to move. I just feel disgusting and I won't go to the gym and I'll just go on a walk. And I don't want to be jumping around like a mad thing in one of these, like, boot camp style classes when, you know, I have a heavy period. Like, let's be honest, girls, it's not a nice feeling. So what I would say is just be kinder to yourself the week of your period. And when it comes to craving, like, obviously remember your why do you want to lose body fat? Like, you know, your period is around for a good 40-50 years. What it was, well, not 50 years, I would say. If you got it when you were 12, you're probably going to have it up until your 40s. A good 30 to 40 years, you're going to have your period. So you need to find ways that are going to work for you to deal with your cravings. Like, for me, I probably don't get, like, periods. I do get periods. I probably don't get period cravings. And I, you know, I try fit what I like into my calories every day. So I never feel like I have to restrict myself or I can't have something. And again, you can have a chocolate bar every day if you want to. Find ways to fit the food you enjoy into your calories, okay? But in terms of motivation, bullshit, don't be waiting around on it. It's not going to be there for you when you need it, okay? Number 3, sleep recommendations, how to improve your sleep. So, you know, sleep is a massive part of fat loss. Like, if you're getting really poor sleep, it's going to cause a domino effect into everything else in your life. It really is. Like, yeah, if you only get 4 hours sleep a night, you can still lose body fat, but it's going to make life an awful lot harder for you, because when we wake up and we've only had 3 or 4 hours sleep, we're more stressed, our anxiety's through the roof, our cravings go through the roof. It's just a really horrible domino effect. And I always, always try hammer into my clients, make sure you're getting at least 8 hours sleep. You turn off screens about an hour and a half before bed, because the blue light in screens, whether it's on your telly, whether it's your laptop or your phone, actually inhibits melatonin. And melatonin is, you know, a chemical in your body that makes you feel sleepier, and it helps you, like, go into that deep sleep, but it helps you kind of, like, your body start to shut down slowly before you go to bed. And yeah, before you just drift off to sleep. Like, if your body's not producing that, you're going to be more wide awake. So that's why people, like, use these blue light blocking glasses. And you can put a filter on your phone as well, like, it's like an orange filter, so I suppose it's causing less damage to your to the melatonin production. But yeah, like, I find if I'm on my phone too much before bed, it's harder for me to switch off then when I close my eyes and put the phone away. Like, it takes a lot longer for me to go asleep. So I put the orange filter on my phone anyway. Try to turn off the phone about an hour before bed. Stick to a sleep schedule and a sleep routine. Try go to bed at the same time every night and wake up at the same time, at least 8 hours. And, you know, a sleep routine where you're winding down, you're getting into bed, say, at 9 o'clock when you usually go to sleep at 10. You might read, you might have a Kindle, you might read a book, you might meditate. It might help you drift off to sleep that bit better. I mentioned about sleep before on one of my other podcasts, and I talked about you can get melatonin supplements, but I did forget to mention that you actually can't buy them over the counter in Ireland. I bought these when I was in Portugal. They were like sleep gummies, melatonin gummies. You can get other ones, like, kind of like herbs and stuff like that, like, mixed into like gummies. Like, they don't say melatonin on the bottle. I don't think it is melatonin, but, you know, it's something similar. Maybe not as strong. Like, I wouldn't depend on melatonin to put me asleep every night either. But, you know, if I know I have a really stressful week and sleep is my main priority, I honestly can't function without sleep, lads. I am just so anxious if I don't sleep properly. So yeah, sleep is really important to me, because if I wake up the next day and I've had poor sleep, I'm not going to the gym and that's it. Like, I'm not going out on a walk. I'm like a bag of cats. So yeah, sometimes if I have a stressful week, I'll take a melatonin gummy. Or, you know, if I know I have to get up really, really early and I put the phone away, I'll take a melatonin gummy, and I want to make sure I get a good night's sleep. And then the next question is water. How to improve your water intake. So I think we can all be guilty of not drinking enough water. So I was that person too. I used to just always drink diet drinks, and there's nothing wrong with them. You know, I still have a can of Diet Coke every day, but I do make a conscious decision to, you know, drink more water, because water is going to hydrate us, and it's not really healthy to be like replacing water with fluids like caffeine and diet drinks consistently, or energy drinks even. You know, having 3 or 4 of them a day rather than like 1 litre of water to 2 litres. So what I would say is, to help improve your water intake, leave them around your house. Leave bottles of water around your house, whether it's at your desk if you work from home, or even if you're in work, always have a bottle of water at your desk, because if it's in sight, it's going to be in your mind. Out of sight, out of mind, in sight, in mind. That's the way I think. So, you know, have one in your car. Just have bottles of water sprinkled around the house and places where you usually spend most of your time, because you'll remember then. It's like being in the cinema with a box of popcorn. You're constantly picking away at it and you don't even realise it. Or sometimes you might put a straw into a pint glass of water and you're just sipping away and you don't even realise you're doing it subconsciously. Water is so important. And, you know, maybe even having a pint of water in the morning with like an electrolyte. You can get like ones that dissolve and stuff, and you can get like a tub of electrolyte powder, and you can just put a scoop in it. Being hydrated when you're going to the gym as well is really important. Like, if you don't have enough water, like 2 to 3 litres in your system when you're going to the gym, I would say your muscle would be like a raisin if you're dehydrated, whereas if you're hydrated, your muscle is going to be like a grape. Like, think of it like that. Just going to be harder to stretch, for your muscle to flex, etc., and contract and stuff. And you can get quite lightheaded as well if you're dehydrated and you're going into the gym. I've often felt like that myself, especially in the summertime when it's really warm or you're sweating profusely. You can start seeing black spots, and we don't want that. Okay, so number 5. Tips for joining the gym, if you're a first timer. Like, I know a lot of people are going to be thinking about that now over January, or coming into January, they're going to be buying gym memberships. What I would say is, you know, even if you're just sticking to a basic program to start off, and then you might hire an online coach down the line, but pick 3 machines. So one for your chest and shoulders, like a chest press machine, one for your legs, so it could be a leg press machine, and then one for your back, so it could be a seated row. Just pick 3 machines. And, you know, when you join the gym, go in on the treadmill, walk on the treadmill for about 40 minutes. Look around the gym while you're on the treadmill. Like, I don't know, some gyms, they might have a treadmill where it's just facing the wall. But, you know, walk around, have your earphones in. Like, no one's looking at you. People are so self-absorbed and obsessed with themselves. They're not looking at you. So don't be worried about that. So I know that's easier said than done, but they're not looking at you. People are way too focused on themselves. People are very selfish, and they're usually, you know, thinking about what they're going to have for dinner later that day. They spend most of their time on their phone, their head buried in their phone, thinking, what song should I play next? But focus on 3 machines for, you know, those 3 muscle groups, and do 3 rounds of 8 to 12 reps, and just track it on your phone, on your notes app. And you get really, really good at them until you start moving on to a different machine for that muscle group. So you might move on to a shoulder press machine then. And then you might move on to a leg extension machine for your quads, those big muscles at the front of your legs. And then you might use a lat pull down machine for your back as well. So yeah, I would walk on the treadmill, have a good look around the gym, see where everything is. If the treadmill is in a position, you know, it's on an open floor, it's not facing a wall. And yeah, you can kind of gauge then where every machine is, etc. YouTube the machines that you're using so you can see how they're used, etc. Don't be worried. Just don't be biting off more than you can chew. Just focus on 3 machines, even focus on 1 machine, and you know, have a look at it, what way it works, and ask someone who works in the gym. Trust me, the gym I go to, the lads always look like they're twiddling their thumbs, because there's not enough people going up and asking them for help. Like, otherwise they're just cleaning, you know. They'd be happy to help you. They got that job because they want to help people. So yeah, take advantage of it. And then number 6, EMOM. Like, can you build muscle with EMOM? So EMOM means every minute on the minute, and it's a type of high intensity interval training, okay? I don't think it's good for building muscle. It's good for like peeling off body fat, burning calories, staying fit, etc., and, you know, maintaining the muscle that you have. But basically what it means is, you've, say, 2 minutes to do an exercise, or 3 minutes to do an exercise, to do as many reps as possible. So let's just say a squat, okay? So you, I haven't done EMOM in a while, I'm probably not even explaining this right. Say you have to do like 12 reps of a squat. You have to do that within 3 minutes, okay? So let's say you do it in 90 seconds. So you've only 90 seconds to rest then before you jump into the next round. But it just means like you're banging out the reps, you're not really going to be able to go heavy because you could injure yourself if you're going too quick. I just don't think you can focus on technique, execution, and you're probably going to provoke an injury. So I think it's good for maybe like high reps and like, you know, lighter weight. But to build muscle, I would say I'd be focusing on, you know, like longer rest periods because your body needs to recover efficiently so you can go back into the next round and then like lift proper again. So yeah, EMOM's a great way to stay fit and peel off body fat, but in order to build muscle, I wouldn't recommend it, to be honest. Number 7, slimming waltz. So this is something I don't really mention on the podcast, but slimming waltz works for some people, and that's fine. If some people have got great results from that, that's great. But the only issue I have with slimming waltz is it's a short-term fix, and it's not educating you about food. It's basically, it's giving you like a number of rules. Like, you have to follow this rule book or else you won't lose body fat. You can't eat this, you can't eat that. Like, I hate when coaches say you're not allowed to eat that and you're not allowed to do this. Yes, I know I'm doing a photo shoot and I'm signing up for that, and I know what I'm signing up for. I know that I have to make sacrifices. I know that I can't have X, Y, and Z, or I can't drink alcohol. But I can just switch that off then and then, you know, go back into a normal fat loss phase a couple of months later. But the thing is, with Slimming World, you can't be carrying a book around with you everywhere you go that tells you how many sins is in this, how many sins is in that. I'd rather educate people on what's in what, how much protein is in this, why do we need to eat carbohydrates, why do we need more protein. Like, Slimming World, there's no even kind of like training information or like gym information or whatever. It's just all about food. Like, when you go to an online coach, they're going to teach you the benefits of training and nutrition. They're going to tell you why you should be eating more protein, why you need more protein, why you need a balanced plate, like not how many sins, oh, you can't eat that because there's 4 sins in it. Like, I just think it's a short-term fix and it's not actually educating you on food. But the question is, Slimming World, can't lose weight but go to the gym. Well, she said, this girl said she used to be in Slimming World, but now she's, you know, training properly. She can't lose weight because she's going to the gym and she's eating healthy. Okay, so define healthy, because people can eat healthy Monday to Friday and then go off the rails on the weekend, and then they think they're eating healthy, but they're actually not even eating any protein. They're just eating like a lot of colourful shit like vegetables, and they're not having enough protein with their meals. And then, you know, protein keeps us full, and because you're not eating protein, you're not full, and then you could end up going off the rails every evening because you're fucking starving. Do you know what I mean? So what I would say is, how long have you been in a calorie deficit? If you're finding it hard to lose weight, are you in a calorie deficit? You know, if you're only in it a couple of months, I think that you need to use a TDE calculator first. Find out what your calorie deficit is, because I've had a lot of clients who are in Slimming World, and one of the red flags I get from them when I start training them is they're notoriously known for under eating, and it's not their fault, because they're not educated with it when it comes to food, proper nutrition, you know, because they've just been taught one way, and that's the Slimming World way. But I would find out what your actual calorie deficit is, because you could be under eating and then your body's basically adapting to those calories after a certain amount of time. And it's what it's trying to do is your body's trying to run efficiently. It's like, okay, you're really under eating here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to slow down your metabolism. I'm going to stop you from burning a lot of calories when you're working out, because we need to survive here and we need this energy like to keep you alive. So I'm going to stop burning calories through exercise. Well, dramatically reduce the calories from walking, etc. And we're going to put these calories towards just to help your body function, to keep you alive. So when you actually increase your food and you eat the proper calorie deficit for you, your height, your weight, your age, etc., how active you are, your body then like starts working properly. It starts firing all the right engines, you know, your metabolism starts working again, your period can come back. Sometimes people can lose their period if they're under eating for a long period of time, and everything just starts working with more food. And I know you're thinking, but you just said a calorie deficit, what do you mean more food? But your body requires a certain amount of food, whether it's a calorie deficit or not, to function for your height, weight and age and level of activity. So you need to make sure you're eating the right amount. That's what I don't like with Slimming World. People could be eating 900 to 1000 calories a day and they're not even aware of it, and yet the weight might fall off them at the start, but then they start to stall. So what I would say is find out the correct calories for you. You know, make sure you're eating the correct amount of food for how active you are. Some people are training 7 days a week and they're still not eating enough food for that. They think less is more, but it's not. Sometimes we need to be eating the correct amount of food. Like my own coach, you know, I had a chat with him on one of my other podcasts, and he has said as well that he's had women who've come to him and, you know, they've stopped dropping body fat, and it's because they're just under eating, seriously under eating. And they just double the food then. They've gone from 1,200 calories to 2,400, and everything just starts dramatically changing in a positive way. So yeah, make sure you're eating the correct calories, you're being consistent, and if you are doing it right, make sure you are in a calorie deficit. Make sure you're tracking, because some people can say they're tracking, but they're not tracking their butters, their sugars, their drops of milk, etc. All that adds up over the week. And then the next question is, how do you keep going? So I'd say, like, that's probably more of a discipline question. So I would say, I remember reading an analogy in a book before, and it said, imagine that you're on your deathbed and you're 80 or whatever, and God, I don't believe in God now, like I'm an atheist, but like I'm just going to use this analogy because this is where I read it, these were the words. And God, you know, before you like go to heaven, God presents you with the person that you could have been. And the way I look at it is, the person I want to be standing at the end of my bed is the person who had no regrets, gave everything her all. She didn't half-ass anything, you know, she succeeded with all of her goals. She's loads of drive in her. She was very ambitious, and everything she said she was going to do, she done. And I don't want someone standing at the end of my bed who didn't jump when she was supposed to, didn't go for her goals because she was too afraid. Like, I don't want to leave any stone left unturned. And it's the same, and I apply that to everything in life. I don't want to have any regrets. I don't want to look back in 20 years, I should have started then. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? So, you know, I am a bit late to the party, and I was like that in my early 20s and my mid-20s. But now with my career, everything, I just apply that analogy. I don't want someone standing at the end of my bed, my deathbed, saying, you should have done this, you should have done that. Look what you could have been. Look at this person you could have been. Like, you know, you have financial freedom. You have a happy family. You're never going to go hungry. You reached everything. You reached all your dreams, etc. I don't want someone standing at the end of my bed who just half-assed everything. So I just apply that to everything in my life. Even when I'm doing the photo shoot, like if I have something in my mind, I know I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to half-ass it. And it's the reason why I advertise it on social media as well, about giving up alcohol. It keeps me accountable. Why I pay a coach on a monthly basis, it keeps me accountable. I don't see that as an expense. I see that as an investment, because I know when I'm 60 or 70, I'm going to be able to run up the stairs when my friends are going to like have to link someone walking up the stairs. I constantly think in the future, not in an anxiety way, but I constantly think about myself 50 years down the line, thinking I don't want to look back with any regrets. So yeah, that's how I keep going with everything. Who's going to be standing at the end of my bed when I die? So the next question is, what, we're coming up to like 32 minutes, so I'm going to try get through these in the next 15, hopefully. I have it on a notepad here. So my next question was, how did you get started and what was the moment? So I got started, I'd say, with the gym consistently in my mid-20s. A guy I used to go to school with started taking on clients. He was in the gym across the road from me, and I was like, oh, do you know what, I'm kind of sick of like eating shit, like really shit sleep schedule, shit food, shit everything, lack of movement. I'm going to hire a coach and see how I get on. And, you know, for the first year or two, I was very on and off. I was like, yeah, whatever, when he was telling me to eat this, eat that. You know yourself, I don't like using the word don't do this, don't do that. But he was trying to give me really good, solid advice. And I suppose for the first couple of years, it was going in one ear and out the other. And I was telling him everything he wanted to hear, but the scale wasn't going down. And then eventually I just started listening to him, because I was still practicing bad habits. And I started listening to him, and I actually started changing my habits then, and I started losing body fat. I started eating more protein. I would walk back and forth to work. I didn't drive at the time, so I'd walk to the gym as well. I was doing a lot of walking then, and I'd be training about 4 days a week. And, you know, over time, I was going on a holiday, so that was like one of my goals. Over time, I think I lost about a stone. And I was like, so this is all I had to do. And I was taking these dramatic approaches, cutting out carbs, cutting out whatever, you know, chocolate. And I could eat that all along, but I suppose once I got my fitness pal and I learned about the flexible approach, you know, if it fits your macros, etc., you can still lose body fat and enjoy chocolate and stuff. once I started using that approach, I actually found it so much easier, so much simpler, and I enjoyed it more. I enjoyed the process and it didn't feel tedious. And I said, you know, I actually want other women to know that this is how straightforward it is. I'm not going to say fat loss is straightforward. It's not the same for everyone, but it's not as complex as you think it is. But once I started seeing results, I wanted to keep going with it. I wanted to help more people. And now that I am helping people, that also keeps me accountable. Because I feel like I have to show up as my best self if I want to help other people, because I can't half-arse something and then lecture one of my clients about them half-arsing something. So, you know, I have to be a role model to my clients, and that helps keep me accountable. But I suppose it's just patience. It really is patience. There is going to be a moment where the pain of staying the same outweighs the pain of change. I think that's what it is, because at the moment, well, for some people, the pain of change is too much, and it outweighs the pain of stay pain one more time. So the pain of change outweighs the pain of staying the same. So if you're in that boat at the moment, you're not ready. But you can't keep using that excuse either. But one day you are going to look in the mirror, or like, you're just going to have that moment, that rock bottom moment. You're like, I'm sick of feeling like this. And I don't care how uncomfortable it's going to feel. I want to change. And I want to change for the better. But you can't just say, I'm going to change for 8 weeks. I'm going to do an 8 week challenge and then that's it. You have to want to do, you have to be in this for life. I'm not saying you have to diet for life, but this is a lifestyle change. You know, this is something that you're just someone who goes to the gym now. Not for 8 weeks. You're just someone who goes to the gym now consistently. You're someone who loves walking, and you're someone who has protein with every meal. That's just the person you are now. You're not just that person for 8 weeks. That's the way I had to think. And, you know, I've carried it on now for like the last 6 years. And I'd say in the last 3 years, like, I've really knuckled down. And like, that's just from working with really good people, surrounding myself with really good people as well. So the next question is, will you stay on track over Christmas? So like, for someone who's only starting a calorie deficit, like, Christmas can be like a bit of an obstacle, because it's an uncomfortable situation. There's a lot of nights out. It's a very social period. You know, alcohol as well. Like, there's so much calories come from alcohol, especially if you're drinking beer or cider, that you wouldn't normally drink from one end of the year to the next. But some people drink more alcohol in the month of December than they do all year, you know. But for me, like, it's just ingrained in me now to stay on track, whether I'm just at maintenance calories, whether I'm not even looking to lose body fat. Like, I'll just... it's ingrained in me. Like, when I'm going to eat a meal in a restaurant, I'm thinking, does this have a really high protein content? It's very alien for me to go downstairs and put on two slices of toast and just eat toast. Not because it's bad, but I'm like, how is this going to benefit me? Like, I'm not going to feel full after this. Like, that's just the way I think about food now. I'm like, if I put a piece of chicken and a piece of ham on this toastie, yeah, that would satisfy me now and that would fill me. But two slices of bread, I'm like, that's not going to fill a gap in my tooth. But I used to be that person, and I just snack on shit and eat shit for the sake of it. So, and that's just the way I am daily now. So over Christmas won't really make a difference to me. Yeah, I'll enjoy probably a bit more chocolate than usual and stuff, but I won't be in a fat loss phase over Christmas anyway. Like, so I have that extra bit of room, like, to eat that bit more. And obviously I'm not drinking over Christmas either, so I'm going to be consuming less calories anyway from the lack of alcohol. But I wouldn't say I stay on track. I would say that I would eat well 90% of the year anyway. You know, so I'm tuned in with my nutrition in that sense. But I can understand someone who's only starting out on a calorie deficit. Like, it is difficult. They're coming up against all these nights out and stuff like that. And I wouldn't recommend someone to go into a calorie deficit over the Christmas period, particularly, like, you know, the last 2 weeks of December. Like, my 8 week challenge is finishing up this week. And I told the girls that when they started in October, like, I'm not going to have you dieting over Christmas week. Like, it's not sustainable. It's probably not the best idea, especially when people are only starting out. But people who are seasoned pros, you know, they're into bodybuilding, they're into the gym consistently, and they look after their food. Christmas is only one day to them. It is. And on Christmas Day, I won't track a fucking calorie. I won't. And I'll probably eat half a tub of Pringles. I'm not even going to care what's on my plate on Christmas Day. Like, I'm just going to eat. I'm just going to enjoy the food. But again, it's ingrained in me then to wake up the next day and just get back on track, have my usual breakfast, my usual lunch, my usual dinner, except just without the alcohol this time. The next question is, how many calories should I be eating? Okay, so I don't know you from Adam, but what I would say is go on to tdeecalculator.net. That's usually the calculator I use. and it's going to ask your height, your weight, your age, how active you are. And then when it asks you how active you are, a lot of people make this mistake. It'll say 1 to 2 days, 2 to 3 days. A lot of people will just put in how active they are at the moment, and you're probably not moving at all. So they're going to put in 1 to 2 days when you should be putting in how many days you plan to be active, because then that's going to give you the correct amount of calories for how often you're going to be working out. Because what happens is you need less food for, you need less food the less active you are. So if you're only going to put in 1 to 2 days, like, you could be getting like 1,300 to 1,400 calories, but you're going and training in the gym 3 to 4, 4 to 5 days a week, and you're seriously under eating for that amount of, you know, for that amount of movement. And that's how people can't really sustain it, because they're not eating enough food for that amount of activity. So make sure you're putting in how active you intend to be, not how active you are at the moment, okay? And on that tdcalculator.net, when you go halfway down the page, it will give you your maintenance calories, your cutting calories, and then your bulking calories. So what do you want to maintain? What do you want to cut? What do you want to bulk? It will give you those calories, okay? And people are going to be like, oh, what about your macros and stuff like that? So your calories are made up of your macros. So there's 4 calories in 1 gram of protein, 4 calories in 1 gram of carbs, and 9 calories in 1 gram of fat. A rule of thumb I would usually stick to as a beginner just off the bat is 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. So if you're 150 pounds, 150 by 4 gram by 4 calories, because if there's 4 calories of 1 gram of protein, that's already 600 calories you're going to be having now worth of protein, okay? So 150 by 4 600, and if you're 150 pounds, it's going to be 150 grams of protein, all right? And then the rest of your calories, if I use my fitness pal, can just be spent on carbs and fats. You're going to be having a carb source with each meal, etc. Now obviously you want to zone, if you want to zone more in on like goals and stuff like that, and you know what you're, what you want, if there's a specific outcome, yeah, I'd probably get a coach to kind of help you nail down your macros a bit more. But that's just like, you know, baseline, I would say. So number 11, good results. Can you get good results from home equipment? Yeah, so if you're an experienced lifter, I would say you're going to need like a weight, you're going to need a dumbbell rack, like you're going to need heavy dumbbells. But if you're only a beginner and you don't have any equipment, like, you can get really good results from just body weight movements. You can, because the more experienced you are, the more you're going to need to challenge your muscle for it to grow, okay? Like progressive overload, either increasing the reps or the weight each week or every second week or however long it takes you. But if you're an experienced lifter and you're using body weight, your body's going to be like, here, missus, like, this is not a challenge. Like, this is a walk in the park. How am I supposed to grow muscle? You're going to have to do like 100 to 200 squats a day for me to even start feeling something from this, you know? But if you're a beginner, yeah, you're going to find it tough with just body weight alone, because you've never trained before and your muscle's going to be like, whoa, never had to use these muscles before like this. And you will grow some muscle as a beginner. And if you have dumbbells, if you have an array of dumbbells, like 5 kg, 7 kg, 10 kg, you can slowly build up them weights. You know, you can slowly move from the 5 kg up to the 7 kg, which are squat, over like a 3 month period or a 2 month period, however long it takes you. But yeah, if you're a beginner, I would say you can make a lot of progress at home if you've limited equipment. But if you're experienced, like, you're probably going to need to invest in some heavy dumbbells to make progress at home, to be honest. Or like, you know, a barbell and a bench, etc. And a squat rack. Like, you can get them online. They are expensive now. Gym equipment is expensive. But I know a lot of people who made a lot of progress at home during COVID. I used my brother's dumbbells and stuff. Like, they were great. They were a godsend. Some people have, you know, a home gym or like a good lot of equipment out their back garden in a shed or whatever. But yeah, if you're a beginner, I would say you would make a lot of progress. And you can use home stuff as well, like objects from your home, like, you know, a tin of paint, they have a handle on it, you can use that as like a makeshift dumbbell. You could put the tin of paint in a school bag, put it on your back and do squats, etc. You could put, again, tin of paint in the school bag and hold the top handle of the school bag and use that as like a dumbbell for like bicep curls. Or, you know, if you're back, like a one arm row, etc. I just YouTube, use home objects for home workout, and you'd be surprised what will pop up. And then the next question is, when is the app coming out? So I'm hoping the first half of January, like, unless there's any setbacks with like stuff I need to upload or there's a delay on anything. But hopefully the first half of January. Don't worry, I'll be keeping you all updated on that. What's the app that you use to track for you staying off alcohol? What do you use to track it? It's called Nomo, so N-O-M-O. And it's not just for alcohol. You can use it for loads of things like staying off cigarettes, etc. The next question is, training 3 sessions a week, should I train full body or upper or lower, upper, etc.? Depends on your goal. Like, if you want to build your legs, like, would I be training 3 sessions on legs? No, because we can't neglect, like, our back and our push, like our chest and our shoulders and our arms. So let's say you did want to grow your legs. I would probably do 2 full body and then 1 legs. And then if you wanted to focus on your back, I would do 2 full body, 1 back, etc. So you're just dedicating a whole day to back, but you're covering like a bit of back as well on the full body days. But if you're looking to just grow all over, I would say 3 full bodies, and obviously have a rest day in between, because it takes its toll on you doing 3 full bodies. Yeah, that would just be my advice on that. But again, I don't know what your goal is, what you want the outcome to be. But yeah, 3 sessions is a lot, and 2 full bodies, you're hitting every muscle group twice, and then the 3rd session can be, you know, dedicated to the muscle group that you want to grow. And then the next question is, how to make changes in my diet when I'm starting a deficit, so you are on 1500 calories. So if I was going into a deficit, like what I'm eating now is I wouldn't change anything when I'm going into a deficit except the portion sizes. So I'd still be having the same breakfast, I'd still be having the same lunch and dinner, I just have less portions. Like that's what food scale is handy for, you know. Instead of 80 grams of oats, I'd cut it down to 60. Instead of 90 grams of pasta, I'd cut it down to 60 or 50. Like, why am I cutting it down? Because, you know, it's less calories. And then just look at what you're eating now, okay? Don't be cutting out everything. Don't use the all or nothing approach. Oh, I'm going to cut out everything and I'm just going to start eating foods I absolutely despise, because you're not going to be able to stick to that. Look at the foods that you enjoy, the meals that you enjoy, and how can you make them high protein? That's what I would do. If you enjoy cereal in the morning, you know, maybe try oats, or, you know, have a protein shake with your cereal, or try a high protein fry like turkey sausages, turkey pudding, if you like fries for breakfast. Little things like that. Like, you have to think, how can I make the food I'm eating now better, rather than eliminating the food that you enjoy? Like, don't be buying multi-packs of chocolate bars in your shopping every week during a calorie deficit, because you're not helping yourself. Like, you are a product of your environment, and when you're hungry, what you're gonna do, you're gonna go to that chocolate, and it's not gonna make the habits that you're trying to build any better. So yeah, I would say, you know, make room for like 2 snacks a day, stuff that you enjoy, whether it be chocolate. Maybe don't keep buying the multi packs, maybe just buy 1 or 2 bars. And you know, if you live with people who aren't losing body fat but you're trying to make yourself better, have your own little press. I do that. I have my own little press at home, where I put like my snacks and my food in it, you know, little things like that. But again, look at the food you enjoy and just think how you can make more high protein. Like having 5% fat mince rather than full fat mince, which are spaghetti bolognese. And you can apply that to the whole family as well. Like, they're probably not even going to spot it. Probably not even going to spot the difference. Like for a chicken wrap, I would probably not use like, you know, full fat mayo. Probably use low fat mayo. Like, looking for kind of little healthy swaps. Not healthy swaps, but what would be the word? More convenient or beneficial. So if I was going out for a coffee, I wouldn't have a full fat cappuccino with, you know, high sugar caramel. I'd probably have a skinny cappuccino with sugar free caramel. Little kind of swaps like that. And then what's the next question? How to pick a coach that's good for you? Yeah, so like, not every coach is going to suit everyone the same way. Like, one therapist can't suit everyone. I would say you might just have to experiment. Like, I know I'm not going to be the coach for everyone, but there's some clients that just click with me, and, you know, they stay with me for ages. And sometimes people only want to drop in for a 12-week period and then like go off on their own, and that's fine as well. But there is some coaches out there who are just looking to make quick money, and they don't give you that full experience, that they don't give you that personal experience. They kind of just treat you like a number. And the same can be said for clients. Sometimes it's not the coach, it's the client, and sometimes it's not the client, it's the coach. So yeah, you just kind of have to experiment with a few. It's like a relationship, you know, you're gonna have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find the good one. But yeah, like, don't be under the illusion that once you find your first coach, that's it. Like, this is it, you're set for life. Like, sometimes you'll just have to chop and change, and you might stumble across a coach eventually who just gets you. And then the next question is, do you train every day? So my current program is a 6-day training plan. Do I train Monday to Saturday? No. So I would probably do 2 days on, 1 day off. And sometimes it goes into the next week. But I'm covering a lot of the same muscle groups within those 6 training sessions. So for example, if I train my arms on a Monday, I'm not going to, you know, not train my arms then till the following Tuesday. Like, I'm probably going to hit my arms again, like once or twice during the week again. So yeah, I always make sure that like each muscle group is getting trained every 2 to 3 days. Like, so yeah, that's important. But rest days are really important. So I don't just go 6 days straight because you'd be bollocks. So yeah, I try to do 2 days on, 3 at most, 1 day off. But yeah, it's a lot. Like, it's, you know, people probably look at me, I don't know whether they do or not, but like it's a very time consuming process, and it doesn't have to be. Look, you might have a busy lifestyle and you'll find something that suits you, but don't look at me and think that this is what I have to do. I have to copy off Enya's program to either look like her or be her, etc. This suits me and I've made this fit into my life. And sometimes, yeah, it can be hard at times and it can be time consuming. And I have to prioritize this. Sometimes I have to get up just a bit earlier some days so I can fit in my gym sessions. But that suits me. So you have to find something that suits you. You might find 3 sessions is enough. It fits into your lifestyle. And that's fine. That's fine. But 6 days, I can manage 6 days because my coach told me, like, if you can do 6 days, that's fucking great. So yeah, I'm doing 6 days at the moment. And it just means I'm training more frequently. So I'm hitting muscle groups more frequently. And, you know, they're getting that bit of TLC, that bit more than if I was to just train 3 days a week. Do you know what I mean? It does speed up the process a little bit compared to if I was only training 3 or 2 days a week. But that's just the game I play. But you have a completely different set of circumstances and, you know, you might have to just do it differently, but it doesn't mean you're at a less advantage. Right, we're coming to the end now, don't worry. How to make protein porridge. So a lot of people ask me this. So you can make them overnight, you can leave them in the fridge and make them overnight. But what I do is I get 80 grams of oats at the moment because I'm in a surplus. And I add 1 scoop of protein powder. And then the milk, the amount of milk you put in, it dictates the consistency. So I don't like my porridge mad watery, but I don't like it like cement either. So, you know, true trial and error, I suppose I would put in about 120 mils if I was using 80 grams of oat scoop protein powder, 120 mils, and it has a lovely consistency. And I eat it straight away. I don't put it in the fridge overnight. But if I was to put it in the fridge overnight, I would probably put a bit more milk in it because it's going to soak up overnight. So I'd probably maybe try 150 mils of milk. And then I add like 10 grams of peanut butter for fats. Meriden peanut butter, it's the nicest one, by the way. And then a few frozen berries. That's how I make my protein porridge. But a lot of people mess up because they probably put too much milk in it and it's too watery then. And then our final question is, does reverse dieting mean you're going from deficit to maintenance? Yes. So I explained it at the start of the podcast. Reverse dieting is basically you're coming out of a diet phase. Okay. So a lot of people make this mistake when they're just doing a fat loss phase and they say goodbye to their coach when they see what they want to see on the scale. And they just go back to old habits and they just start eating shit again and lack of movement begins again and they just end up piling it all back on. A reverse diet is where you slowly come out of the diet. So you slowly start increasing your calories. So I've done this a few times. So like say, for example, the last photo shoot I did, if I was on 1400 calories and I was doing an hour of cardio a day, what my coach would do is he would bring my calories up to 1600 calories a day and then bring the cardio down to like 40 minutes. So I'm not just completely stopping cardio and my food isn't shooting back up to like 2000 calories. Because that's how people can just start piling it back on. So eventually then as the weeks go on, the cardio drops down to virtually probably 15 minutes and then your calories are then are eventually back up to like 2000. But that could be like over a 6-week period, you know. But that's what a reverse diet is. And it's actually very important when you come out of a severe dieting phase like a photo shoot. And then sometimes it's not needed depending, you know, but yeah, maintenance calories is you're just maintaining your weight. And then a deficit is you're looking to lose weight. And then a surplus is you're looking to gain weight to build muscle or whatever. But yeah, maintenance is the scale just kind of fluctuates between a kilo or two. But if you notice it's consistently going up as the weeks go on, like you're going up like 3 or 4 kilo after 2 months, like you're probably gaining weight and you're probably not eating maintenance calories. But that was a lot of information. And yeah, we're nearly at an hour here. So fair play to you if you've made it this far, because I babbled on something terrible. But it was nice to do a Q&A because I was able to answer a lot of questions, because some of these probably can't be fleshed out enough for an actual episode, some of those questions. So I hope that's helped a lot of people. I got a lot of questions as well on perimenopause. But like, to be honest, this is something that I should just mention. Personal trainers aren't experienced in every facet of, like, you know, whether it be perimenopause, pregnancy, etc. Like, you have to do like branch off courses to get more to be more experienced in that and to be qualified on it. Because with a personal training course, they just teach you the basics, the skeleton, the muscle that's on the skeleton, the digestive system, and, you know, energy systems. Like, we don't learn about menopause. Like, we touch on a bit about nutrition. I'm currently doing an online course about nutrition. Like, it's a separate course altogether. And yeah, so I'm not qualified to talk about perimenopause and give advice on it. But from the podcast that I've listened to, I've picked up a couple of things. But one thing that stood out is, like, if you know, like drinking wine, or you're a big coffee fan, like, that actually intensifies hot flashes. It does. So if you like your couple of glasses of wine during the week, like, and you find your sweats are a lot worse in the night, like, alcohol and caffeine actually intensifies hot flashes. So yeah, I would say maybe limit that as much as possible if you want to get a good sleep. What else? Definitely start picking up weights and going to a gym and training, because having more muscle on your frame is going to increase your metabolism. Because I know a lot of women complain about belly fat or those pouches, and lifting weights is going to increase your metabolism. Walking's brilliant as well. But like, going to these like boot camp classes, boring yourself out and consistently under eating for how active you are is not going to do you any good. Okay, so yeah, walking and getting to a gym. Anything else beyond that, I would probably reach out to a specialist, but that's just all I'm probably qualified to give information on. But yeah, that pretty much sums up the Q&A, and I will be back next week with my next podcast and, you know, some advice going into the January period as well, because there's only like 2 weeks left now in December. But looking forward to it. Thanks for tuning in, and as always, I do appreciate the feedback I get with the podcast. If you have any suggestions on things you'd like to cover or any questions in relation to this podcast, don't be afraid to reach out. Bye.